This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome. For years, our Thursdays at 7 a.m. have been fun with Paul Osborne, the publisher of the Decatur Tribune. You know, it occurs to me that Woodrow is a very strange first name.
Yeah, I guess so.
Woodrow.
You don't hear too many kids named Woodrow today.
Our 28th president, and of course, led us into World War I, was leader of the progressive movement, as it was known at that time. And the name of a school that's been in the middle of all of this conversation about building a new school or not building a new school and all of the controversy in and around Lincoln Park. You have a whole piece about the history of how it started. There was even debate and delays involved going back when it first opened in 1932.
Yeah, people were into it back then. Yeah. So even about, I think, about the name. I think someone to name it after, you know, a local person, and it ended up being Woodrow. And maybe the local person now and relatives are happy they it wasn't named after them.
Yeah, because you didn't want your name sitting on a thing just sitting over there. Yeah. You know, I don't know where to land on all this stuff. The school board members, you know, Dan Oakes is out of here and heading to Florida. Reagan Lewis was in with Dan earlier this week after that was announced. I don't know that there is a decision they can make about a school that's going to make anyone happy.
No, no. And I think it's a very sensitive issue for one thing. And but people really get radical about it.
But is it sensitive? These schools were all built in neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we did. We would put a neighborhood school in, and you build a park, and people got in and out. I went to Woodrow Wilson. I was there for 1 year. They closed it the year after I finished my seventh grade academic year. We got in and out. Yeah. Buses got in and out. There were more kids in District 61 then than there are now.
I think that's right. I think also, though, that along with everything else, education has evolved over the years. I think the demands for what you need in a building and in a facility probably have changed a lot in, you know, during that time. And so, you know, Woodrow Wilson's a beautiful building. I mean,
it was.
Yeah. And certainly I was mayor when rededicated it when it was all fixed up by this businessman who renamed it in memory of his parents.
What was the purpose of the building when that guy did that? I mean, what was he going to do with it?
I talked to him about the future of it, and he thought maybe, you know, the police department or maybe some businesses would locate there. And I really thought at the time, you know, there's no elevator in the building. If you're going to have offices there, you're going to need an elevator, and it's just parking extremely limited there. So uses for that building were extremely limited, and I think it just and it went downhill again because he polished the floors. I mean, he fixed all the windows. I mean, that was in pretty mint condition. He spent, I don't know, a ton of money on that, fixing it up, and it's a shame.
What timeline would this have been, roughly?
I'd say probably 2005, 2006, somewhere along in there.
Okay. And then he just abandoned it?
Yeah, I don't know what he just kind of disappeared. And say he wanted to name it, and he bought it, I think. He saw it advertised and, you know, online, and he bought it. He was a wealthy individual, made his fortune here in America, and he wanted this as a tribute to his parents. But the name never caught on. It was still Woodrow Wilson, and then he just kind of disappeared. And I think he may have had a realty company trying to do something with it, but the police department, of course, couldn't move there. There wouldn't be any parking or anything else.
You know, the parking thing is still, you know, because they talked about, you know, and this happens, you know, as mayor, when something like this goes public, you know, a house that's across the street that might sell for $25,000 is all of a sudden for sale for $75,000, right?
Right.
That's the way this works. Where did everybody park when I was there?
Yeah. Well, I remember dropping one of my sons off there. I think he was in about the same class you were because he had to go to Johns Hill then the second year that he was there. But a lot of people, like myself, would just drop their child off, or son or daughter, in front of the building and drive them on.
But I mean, like teachers and staff and stuff. What I can't understand is how we functioned before, but now it's like everybody talks about, you know, egress and regress, and in and out, and where do you put everybody? How did everybody fit before?
I don't know, except it was a different time. I mean, you're talking about this building is, what, the 1930s when it was built. Yeah. America and the community were a lot different back then. And so,
sure, but I didn't go to Woodrow in 1932. Yeah. I was at Woodrow in 1979.
And it closed then after you were there 1 year. Yeah. And there was a reason for that. And I think when you look at the overall educational process in our community, it's evolved over the years, and the needs of the students have changed, and our whole society has changed, and I think certainly school districts must change with them. Woodrow, as I say, it would cost a lot of money to fix it up. It's being considered as an option. I think the school board has heard enough to know that it's not a viable option. Okay. It won't happen there.
Okay.
But I don't know if they indicated that the part of Lincoln Park that they wanted was the only viable option for a new school. Well, if that's the case, then the problems at Dennis, the problems at the old Mary French, they're going to remain, because one reason for a new school in that area was to alleviate some of those problems and meet the needs of those students. Those needs will not be met if they're moving in another direction.
Yeah, the whole thing's such a mess. I don't know why a community as a whole, there a number of years ago when they passed the referendum, and I remember Julie Curry was involved and Dave Weber and Kevin Berhaney, and they had a proactive approach of going out. And you remember the conversation, right?
Oh, yeah,
do you want one big school? Do you want two new schools? Do you want to renovate the existing schools? And they sold that to the community, and they voted on it. I mean, they came to the, polling places and voted to raise their taxes to support education.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that had happened today.
I don't know. Well, it was kind of rare that it happened then. I mean, I think
that first time out, but usually those referendums would take two or three attempts to get through, if it got through.
And that was historic that it passed. But I think the message was sold and believed, and rightfully so, of what the community wanted for this district. And I think when you look at the direction the district is going now, there are some needs that need to be met. That at this point, it's such a fluid situation.
Yeah.
Where do you go from here?
I don't know. Here's what I do know. The administrators in those buildings, the principals, the teachers in those classrooms, they're doing their job. They got to get better support out of the Kyle building.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that's the reason there's some resentment. And I don't know how widespread it is, but the feels that maybe the board isn't quite connected to the community the way it should be. I will say, Dan Oakes is retiring, but I kind of tip my hat to him.
Seven terms. People don't listen. You can, people can do whatever they want to do, and they do as far as their opinions are concerned. But that guy got paid zero, I mean, not a cent, for seven terms.
Yeah, and you're going back way beyond before I ran for mayor in that he was on the school board. Yeah. And as you say, he wasn't doing it for the money. You don't get paid anything. And I feel bad because when the announcement was made, and I received it, you received it, I started checking the other media to see what the reaction was. And I went to WAND's Facebook page to see what the comments, if they were positive, negative, or what it was.
You had to go see that? I could have told you what that was.
And I accidentally hit the thumbs up, and I couldn't get it off. Like the Tribune gives a thumbs up, like the guy is gone. And I want to say, it wasn't intentional. So, so it's just like, oh, no. I don't comment on stuff like that on other. But anyway, the other side of this is there have been a lot of good things happen in this district over those years.
Yeah.
And it bothered me to hear people say, well, he should have been forced out.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. How about saying thank you for all those years you served for nothing?
Because there's no state of grace anymore, and I get that. The argument that the board needs to be fired is a ridiculous argument. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with it. They got some people on there that don't even take it seriously. But the problem with District 61 is every 4 years we get rid of four board members. I mean, they can't get any continuity.
Well, that's right. And when you think in the case of Dan Oakes.
He was the only one. Yeah. Everybody else kept coming and going and coming and going and changing up and changing up. And it's hard. And then you put in the number of superintendents, in that same time frame. You're going 18 different directions and you get zero traction.
Well, yeah, I think what bothers me a little bit is, the public, the voters elected him seven times. So it means like they must have liked overall the job he was doing. And when you say we need to get rid of him, he's the only one with experience on the board.
And the experience is an important thing. I'm all for new blood and I'm all for change.
But it's got to be balanced.
But if you keep electing a majority of the school board, a different majority every 4 years, you're not serving what needs to happen in that district because they don't have the opportunity to get anything going.
Well, yeah, and you have to have a mixture, I think. The same way with the city council or any other board, you need new blood coming on. You need new ideas being injected, new votes. And I think when you come on, you're more sensitive maybe to listening to people and what they have to say. You need that. But you also need people that have been there in the battlefield for a while.
Yep.
And they know the dimensions of a lot of these projects you're talking about, and they can explain them. And they can nurture the rest of the board or the rest of the council and say, we've been here before.
I don't – right now I'm just in a sort of a state of suspension. I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know where, and I'm not all that confident. But in regards to that, if you're going to get decent public officials, if you're going to get decent people that run for the right reason, the behavior has to change. You wrote in the City Beat column today about, and I distinctly remember this, Gary Anderson, the late mayor of Decatur, which, the street over there in front of the Civic Center is named after. Mm-hmm. Good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Got punched one time at a city council. I mean, that was an older guy that punched him. There wasn't any physical damage. But that was a big thing, right?
It was.
Because it was so rare. It was so out of the ordinary. It was so like that's breaking so many rules, so much etiquette. Today, I don't even know if it'd be a blip, but back then you talked to him afterwards and that shook him.
Yeah, it did. I had the TV show then. He was on often on that TV show. And I remember after the show was over, we sat in the studio there and we talked quite a bit about that. He was pretty emotional about it. Like, here I'm giving all my effort and time, and someone punches me for that and calls me a name. And this gentleman, if I can use that term, had been harassing him for quite a while, showing up at council meetings and protesting stuff. And I think this was kind of in an informal meeting where they were all kind of close together. And so he just punched him and called him a name. And I think it really hurt his feelings that – You don't serve for that reason. You serve for the community to help everybody, including this guy, and you get punched in return?
Yeah, and you write about some of your experiences and even some restraining orders. And this is the side of the job that people in the general public don't generally get to see. If you're in public life, there is an ugly underbelly out there that just exists, and you deal with it, and you get thick skin. But in today's day and age, I believe it's the number one thing keeping other people from being in public life. Why would you want to sign up for that?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It's different now. I mean, you had threats and that, and say we had restraining order against a couple of people. I even went to the state's attorney's office because, one high-ranking member of the community had made serious threats against myself and the city manager. And you had that, but I would think it goes beyond that now. And I think it's the time in which we live. If people drive crazy, they're rude in their conduct.
But don't you think in some weird way, the politicians, and I don't mean like school board, city council, county board, you know, I mean the politicians from a national level, even a state level, that it some of this is driven by them.
No question about it. Yeah.
And then the people down at the ground level pay the price for that. You know, Mary Miller's going to show you her guns bigger than Rodney Davis's gun. The rhetoric, I'm so tired of it that, I don't want violence on anyone, but they feed into this.
Yeah. And that's, I think you're exactly right. And I sense that. I sense that in the attitudes that have been created with people that disagree with you. It's like you're disagreeing as a national politician, as to someone who's in Congress, you know, and not only are you wrong, I'm going to punch you out if you take another step.
Or worse. Yeah. And the threats and the intimidation and the violence and the go-to move. In some ways, you know, I feel like we've evolved as people, and in other ways, I feel like we're devolving.
Yeah. And I mentioned in that column today that, you know, when I considered running for mayor, you know, I thought about the extra hours I'd have to put in, you know, on the paper and sure. as mayor too.
And you were going to lose business because of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I never thought about the danger of it. You know, I never thought about being physically assaulted or my family members threatened. And today, all the way up to the Supreme Court, you have people who are there serving that their lives are threatened. Someone comes to kill the Supreme Court justice. Yep. I never heard of that before. And it's just like the society has evolved where that's the only way you solve your problem. And maybe you would not be someone who would shoot someone or beat someone up. But how about those people that are on the edge and hearing what you say in a threatening way pushes them over the edge to do something you did not intend to do? And I think that's the age we're living in now. And anyone running for public office, whether it's local or even on the national scene, you have to take that into consideration.
There's no doubt. And both parties are guilty of this. You know, there is this thing where I think the Democrats have this thing. Well, look at how horrible Donald Trump is and how he's instigated all this stuff. Rodney Davis had to scamper across the softball field into a dugout because a Bernie Sanders supporter tried to shoot up members of the Congress on a baseball diamond. It happens on all sides of the political aisle. And their advertising, their direct mail pieces, their threats, they've just amped this up to where politics has become our religion.
Yeah, and not only that, it's been ramped up to the point where they don't even say vote for me, don't vote for that guy because he's so evil.
Vilify everything.
Yeah,
right.
He's awful. My opponent is an awful person. Don't vote for him.
I hope that people will regain their senses and people will. I didn't know the parade story that I read from you. You're at a parade.
Yeah.
You're riding in the back of a car. You're the I'm assuming this is one of our local parades,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And the parade paused, and a woman decided that was the perfect time to accost you.
Yeah. And man, I've never seen a meaner look on a woman's face. It's right in front of the post office. I still even know where it happened. And she came out of the crowd with pointing her finger at me and yelling at the top of her lungs. It's just like, here you're sitting up on the top of the back seat of a convertible.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just so vulnerable there. And so I was watching her, and when she got close, fortunately, the car took off.
know what she was mad about?
I don't, but man, she had the look. I don't know. If looks would have killed, I would have been slumped over there in the back seat. But yeah, and today, as I mentioned in that article, today, I probably, if I saw someone approaching like that in a really mean way, I'd be looking for a gun in their hand instead of a finger pointing at me. Yeah. But say, that was so vivid in my mind, the look on her face and where it happened, right in front of the post office during a pause, that she did create an impression. I don't know what she was mad about, but I didn't hang. She wasn't complimenting me.
Yeah. So. Well, it hits home when you read about what happened over with the Champaign mayor. And this is, you know, just more of a timing thing than anything. She was in the studios with Mayor Wolf just a few weeks ago because she was here as part of the Illinois Municipal League gathering that was in Decatur. She was on the show with this very nice lady. And the next thing you know, you're reading about terrorist threats and you know, people threatening to shoot up part of Champaign-Urbana and hundreds of threatening emails to the mayor. It's just terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And as you say, that's why people say, I don't want any part of that. And you know, as I wrote in there, you know, God bless these people that step forward, or, you know, our own mayor. You don't make a whole lot of money, and you spend an awful lot of time. Probably you're paid less per hour than anybody in Decatur, you know, for the time and energy that it takes. But, you know, we need to respect these people. It might not always agree with them. And realize they're there to serve on this local basis, yeah. Especially school. They're there to serve.
I don't really understand. I mean, I do from a mental health point of view, why a section of the public always has to have something to be so angry about.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, really. I mean, what is the purpose of that? And why is it that you are so angry? What is it the city council would do? I mean, even the worst case decision, go back to when they lost the mall, whatever it might be, leaf burning, whatever the controversies over the years. Why are you so angry about it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like it's a personal affront to you and everything you stand for.
Yeah, but I think that's more of an internal them thing than it is the actual decision or anything really done by a city council or a school board.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line, too, is these people were elected to represent us.
Yep.
You weren't.
No, and generally what I find from these people that we're talking about, they don't vote.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think you identified one person that kept going to council who never voted, and he disappeared then. So you shamed him out of that.
You know.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I never got any real thanks from those council members. You know, there was a guy who would show up as, you know, citizens, you know, the appearance of citizens, like every Monday of a city council meeting and scream and yell. He wasn't as bad as the people are today, but he was an early, you know, iteration of that. And we went down and looked at the voting rolls. This guy had never, ever voted in a city council election and showed up every council meeting to do this. And it was just, in my opinion, it was like, if you're going to do this, you got to at least do that.
Yeah, my feeling exactly. Yeah. Yeah, if you're not going to take the...
And then we did that, and man, that was the last year. You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, all these years later, I thank you for the community and the council.
You know, here's the moral of the story. Thank you for your service. Okay. Not only your twice elected place as the mayor of Decatur, but what you've done with the Tribune over the years. And I know that you take heat, and that's just the name of the game. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. And I'm glad there are people that are willing to take the heat because the cause is more important.
Well, I appreciate that. And also, I guess I look at it that, you know, the vast majority of people are super nice people.
They are. And it's not hard to believe if you just trust what most of your day-to-day life looks like. It's kind of hard to believe if you spend much time on Facebook.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's what keeps me going. Someone asked, well, how do you keep an optimistic opinion? Well, you know that it's still news. It's unusual if someone is really mad and irate compared to those people that just go about their daily work and help people. And when there's a need, they respond. Saw that in the community food drive.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, those are the people that you say, yeah, that's what this community's about. It's not about threats and being happy when someone fails and that. We want people to succeed here.
And there's a lot of great stuff, man. Yeah. I'm telling you, I told the story to Nick earlier. We've got an intern we had an intern, I think her time's up, from Illinois State University through the Illinois Broadcasters Association this summer. And the guy who is in charge of that program lives in Chicago. This is radio and television. And, you know, he was coming down for a market visit, you know, with the intern and with Lindsay, who supervised her this summer. And he had been down. He came down to Decatur like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, because he's a huge rock and roll fan, goes to concerts everywhere. And he came down to see Cheap Trick at the Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater. And this is a guy in Chicago. He just went on and on. You know, his wife and him came down. They'd never been to Decatur. They went to the Devon. They stayed overnight. They shopped down on Merchant Street and ate lunch in downtown. And he just went on and on about this community.
Oh, yeah.
From a stranger's point of view. Like, I don't have any preconceived notions at all. Wow, what a community you have.
Oh, yeah. And we've had people come here from other communities that hated to come here. And once they got here, they didn't want to leave.
Yep. Sometimes I think the homegrown folks need to talk to some of those people or just look through life through a different lens. Paul, as always, we appreciate everything you do. Paul Osborne, City Hall Insider, former mayor of Decatur, publisher of the Decatur Tribune. You can read his stuff at DecaturTribune.com or just get a subscription. a great idea for a gift if you got folks that are living out of town. They want to keep up on a weekly basis.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.